On this week's 51%, we kick off our series on endometriosis, an inflammatory disease impacting roughly 1 in 10 women worldwide. Surgeon and excision specialist Dr. Laura Liu teaches us the basics of the disease.
It's not just limited to the pelvis, it's not just limited to the reproductive organs. It is a full-body systemic disease.
And patient advocate Amy Corfelli shares how you can better support the endo warriors in your life. I'm Jesse King, it's all up next on 51%.
I was standing around like one of those girls I had seen in a movie. The whole world was a movie back then. I had my sunglasses on, I wanted to be seen without seeing Shiloh or Lita. I wasn't really in it, I didn't really get it.
You're listening to 51%, a WAMC production dedicated to women's issues and experiences. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Jesse King. Today, we're finally kicking off our series on endometriosis. For the next few weeks, we'll be speaking with doctors, patients, advocates, and researchers about a disease that impacts an estimated 1 in 10 women worldwide. But we still know so little about it. Even today, there is no known cause of endometriosis, no cure, and the only way it can be definitively diagnosed is through surgery. Patients report it can take years, over a decade even, to receive a diagnosis and start managing their symptoms. Some women experience extreme pain over even the mildest of cases, while others with advanced endometriosis can go their entire lives without knowing that they have it. To get a better understanding, I recently spoke with Dr. Laura Liu, a gynecologic surgeon serving patients in New York City and Jersey City. She's trained in complex gynecologic surgeries, but since 2018, she has focused solely on laparoscopic excision surgery for endometriosis, cutting out lesions that endometriosis causes in the body. There's a bit of division in the endometriosis community about the best path of treatment, but excision is becoming increasingly sought after as a method that can provide long-term relief. Nowadays, Dr. Liu performs anywhere from 15 to 20 surgeries a month. She says she aims to be a dependable resource in a field that has few experts.
Okay, so the definition of endometriosis is endometrial-like glands and stroma that is found outside of the uterus. Every month, if you're not pregnant, you have a period if you're not hormonally suppressed. And the period is basically you're shedding the inside of the uterus, and that's called the endometrial cavity. That tissue is called the endometrium or endometrial tissue. That tissue is what comes out with your period, and it's not that same tissue, but it's sort of like that same tissue that is found inside of the pelvis or inside the abdomen, and that is called endometriosis. And this tissue can be, it can be on the bladder, it can be on the bowel, it can be on the diaphragm, it can be on nerves, it can be on the ovaries, you know, it can even be in the lung, it can be anywhere in the abdomen or the pelvis. And it's abnormal tissue. It's not supposed to be there. So it can cause a lot of inflammation. It can cause a lot of pain, particularly relating to the menstrual cycle. You know, a lot of my patients will say, yeah, I have really bad periods. Like I'm bedridden for 2 days. I can't get out of bed. I have to call out of work. I have diarrhea. I have constipation. I'm throwing up. I feel like I have to pee all the time. It feels like I have a UTI every time I have my period, but I go to urgent care, I don't have a UTI. Or patients who have, you know, even diaphragmatic endometriosis, some patients will even have a collapsed lung. Every time they get their period, they have a collapsed lung. They have to go to the ER, they put in a chest tube, and that's called catamenial pneumothorax, which means that every time you have your menstrual cycle, you have a collapsed lung because endometriosis is in the diaphragm and invading into that cavity. But I think one of the most common symptoms of endometriosis is going to be painful periods. And the problem with that is that a lot of patients will go to their OBGYN or they'll talk to their mom, or, you know, they go to the school nurse if they're a teenager, and they're just told, oh, it's just a bad period, honey, just take some Advil, you're fine. And so patients are taught that this is normal. But I'm telling you, know, but it's really not normal if you're having to call out of work 2 to 3 days a month, if you're having to miss class 2 to 3 days a month because of your period, if you're constantly in the bathroom, if you're not able to have a good quality of life because of your periods, you know, to me, that's a huge problem. Another common symptom of endometriosis that a lot of people don't think about either, it's not just pain, it's not just bowel dysfunction or urinary dysfunction. A lot of patients can't get pregnant. endometriosis is very closely associated with infertility. And a lot of patients are told, oh, we don't know why you can't get pregnant. You have unexplained infertility. The statistics are 30 to 63% of patients with unexplained infertility actually have endometriosis. And actually, there was a paper that was published earlier this year in January of 2024, which actually showed a higher rate, a very, very high rate, actually, of endometriosis causing, quote unquote, unexplained infertility.
I know researchers have not really agreed or determined a definitive cause of endometriosis yet, but do we have ideas at least of where this might come from?
There's a lot of different theories. We don't know for sure. I think one of the most widely accepted theories, which is now people are starting to think this probably isn't really how this really isn't the cause of endometriosis, is the theory of retrograde menstruation. So again, every single time you have your period, you know, the endometrial tissue is shed and it comes out. The theory behind retrograde menstruation is that some of that tissue will actually flow, instead of coming out through the vagina, some of it will flow back out through the tubes. And then that's how the endometriosis is, you know, seeded or implanted, is through retrograde menstruation, that tissue flows backwards out the tubes and then can be on the ovaries or can implant in the pelvic cavity. That theory was proposed, you know, basically 100 years ago. And I think it's still taught in medical school. I think that's the most widely accepted theory, although there's a lot of flaws with that theory. I think now the trend is more towards people thinking that it's probably more of a genetic thing or hereditary factor. You're just born with it, and that these cells don't really manifest itself until puberty. Because there have been, you know, I don't like to talk about this a lot, but there were studies that were done on female fetuses, and they actually found endometriosis in these fetuses, which shows that, you know, you're kind of born with it. It's not just from retrograde menstruation. And we know that patients who have a first degree relative that have endometriosis is also 7 times increased risk to have it as well. So I think we're trending more towards that direction now. I don't think the retrograde menstruation theory is holding as much weight as it once did.
There's also no cure for endometriosis, but there are various ways in which people try to manage their symptoms, including surgery. You obviously specialize in excision, which is cutting out endometriosis lesions. Some people also go for ablation, which is more burning off the top levels of a lesion. Could you go into details, I guess, on some of the different treatment plans that you see your patients take?
So by the time patients have found me, you know, I seem to be like the last stop at this train station, like at the very end. Most of my patients have already trialed birth control pills, IUD, other hormonal suppressions such as Lupron or Alyssa, Myfembree. You know, they've gone to GI doctors. They've had 2 colonoscopies for suspected IBS, or they've gone to urologists where they've been diagnosed with painful bladder syndrome or IC or interstitial cystitis. And they've gone through all these other treatments and more or less have not really been successful or can't find long-term relief with any of these treatments. I specialize in just doing surgery. Some of my patients have had previous surgery, generally done by their regular GYN, OBGYN, who, you know, again, is up at 4 a.m. delivering a baby and then comes and does their surgery at 7:30 a.m. and doesn't really specialize in it, and may perform ablation or may just take a quick peek and say, oh, you know what, you don't have any endometriosis, it's nothing, or burn a couple of endometriosis spots and then say, you know what, let's just treat the rest, quote unquote, treat the rest with birth control pills or Lupron. That seems to be the majority of my patients who have either failed conservative management or who have had prior surgeries and really not have much relief because they may not have received the proper treatment, which in my opinion is excision, which means that you have to cut the endometriosis lesions out. You can't just burn it. You have to remove it in order to get full relief.
If you decide you want to go the surgery route, do you have any advice on how to go about picking your surgeon, I guess?
Yeah, I think it's really important to do your research. And I think a lot of patients don't know that there are surgeons out there who only specialize in endometriosis excision surgery. don't be scared to interview your surgeon. Ask how many cases have you done? Do you feel comfortable operating on other organs besides just, you know, ovaries, fallopian tubes, and uterus? Do you feel comfortable? Like, what would you do if I have bowel endometriosis or bladder endometriosis? You know, do you work with the team to help you with these complex cases? And just, I think it's important to find someone who really, really only just focuses on endometriosis and doesn't do a lot of other things such as pap smears or, like I said, delivering babies. I think OBGYNs are incredible. It's an incredible profession, but we're spread very, very thinly. And when you have endometriosis, you truly want someone who just does endometriosis excision all day, every day, because it is such a complex disease and you want it done right the first time. You want this surgery, you want your first surgery to be your last surgery.
And what are the odds that it can come back after excision?
Yeah, that's a great question. So recurrence rates, studies have shown that recurrence rates in the hands of an experienced excision surgeon are less than 30%. It ranges from 10 to 30%. Can endometriosis recur? Yes, it can. But your best predictor of long-term success and not needing an additional surgery after your first one or after your surgery with an excision expert is you have to really make sure that the surgeon who's doing your surgery truly is focused on endometriosis, truly knows what non-classical lesions look like, who truly can get all of the endometriosis out. Because if you have surgery done by someone who doesn't specialize in it, you know, the likelihood of them missing disease because they don't know what to look for or not feeling comfortable at removing all of it is going to be much higher than if you have surgery done the first time by, you know, an expert.
If you have time, I'd like to talk a little bit about adenomyosis, which is kind of like a sister of endometriosis, I guess you could call it. But how is adenomyosis different?
Adenomyosis is a whole different animal. Oh my gosh. Quickly, adenomyosis is basically just endometriosis of the uterus. So it's endometriosis that has infiltrated the muscle of the uterus or the wall of the uterus. This is a difficult, I mean, you think endometriosis is bad. I mean, adenomyosis is a nightmare because it does affect the uterus. And the classic symptoms of adenomyosis is, you know, heavy bleeding with clots, a lot of centralized pelvic pain, but sometimes the uterus on imaging is a little bit enlarged. And really the only way that you can treat adenomyosis and even diagnose adenomyosis definitively is with a hysterectomy. You have to remove that uterus and then you have to look at it under a microscope. And then that's how you get a diagnosis. The problem with adenomyosis in patients who are young, such as their 20s or 30s, you know, a lot of them, they want to preserve the future fertility in case they, you know, for family planning and everything like that. So it is very difficult to manage adenomyosis. And a lot of times we are stuck with just symptomatic management or conservative methods such as birth control pills, the IUD. Those are the two things that can help with the symptoms such as the heavy bleeding and centralized uterine pain. But really the only treatment for adenos is with a hysterectomy, unfortunately.
I've heard that some patients for endometriosis are also recommended for a hysterectomy. Is that true? And does that still happen today? What do you make of that?
Exactly. It's not because, again, remember, endometriosis, the definition of endometriosis is endometrial-like tissue that's found outside of the uterus. You're removing an organ that has nothing to do with the disease. So you remove the uterus, but you leave all the endometriosis behind, the patient's still going to be in pain and still have symptoms. It's sort of like, you know, you're going in for surgery because you have appendicitis. And so the surgeon decides to take out your gallbladder instead.
I've also heard from some patients who were told by their doctor to get pregnant as a way of managing their symptoms. Does that make sense to you? Because when I heard it, that just kind of sounded wild to me and not necessarily very helpful. As you know, even as you said, endometriosis can make getting pregnant difficult to begin with.
Right. I mean, and the logic or the reason behind doctors telling patients to get pregnant is because, you know, it is a when you are pregnant, you don't, first of all, you don't have your period for 9-10 months, probably longer, because especially if you breastfeed. So that is a hormonal suppression. It's basically like birth control pills. So that can help your symptoms. The problem is that after you have your baby and your period comes back and your periods were debilitating before you got pregnant, they're still going to be debilitating after pregnancy. And now you have a newborn that you have to take care of. You can't just lie in bed all day for 2 days. It's just not a reasonable option for patients. You know, patients have told me, their doctor has said, look, you have endometriosis. You have three options. One is to go on birth control pills. One is to get pregnant. And the third option is to have a hysterectomy. And those are the options that patients are being offered in 2024. It's insane. It really upsets me.
Well, Dr. Liu, thanks so much for taking the time. Are there any other aspects of endometriosis that you think people like us commonly misunderstand?
Yeah, and I think you mentioned that earlier, Jesse, that it's not just limited to the pelvis. It's not just limited to the reproductive organs. It is a full body systemic disease. We've done lung resections because it has gone into patients' lungs before, taken out kidneys because the endometriosis so deeply infiltrated into the pelvic sidewall and affected the ureter so much that the kidney actually just died. It is a very, very serious disease. It's not just a bad period. It cannot be treated other than removal or excision. You can manage the symptoms with, like I said, you can take Advil. Some patients will take birth control pills for like 20, 30 years and they have no symptoms. Then they come off of it because they're trying to get pregnant and then all of their symptoms restart and then they have difficulty getting pregnant. There are also patients, I just talked with a patient earlier this morning. She had no symptoms. She just kept on having recurrent miscarriages or failed embryo transfers. And did her surgery and, you know, she had endometriosis. Sometimes your only symptom may be that you're not able to get pregnant or you're diagnosed with unexplained infertility. You may have perfect periods. You may have no problems going to the bathroom. You may have no other symptoms other than I can't get pregnant. You know, if that's the case, then I think endometriosis should be considered as well.
Dr. Laura Liu is a gynecologic surgeon and endometriosis excision specialist in New York City and Jersey City. You can learn more about her work at lauraluemd.com. Now that we've established that endometriosis is more than just painful periods, what is it like to live with this disease day in and day out? Amy Corfelli covers all of that and more in her podcast In 16 Years. Corfelli lives with a number of different diseases and conditions, including endometriosis, fibromyalgia, interstitial cystitis, and mast cell activation syndrome. She first started experiencing endometriosis symptoms as a child in 2002, but it took her roughly 16 years to finally get diagnosed. Corfelli says there's a lot of misinformation surrounding endometriosis, even among doctors. And part of the reason we know so little about it is because research for the disease is chronically underfunded.
In 2022, the NIH, is the largest source of biomedical research funding globally. They allotted 0.038%. So we're talking a little over 3% of their budget for patients with endometriosis. So they basically allotted $2 per patient. Diabetes, which is actually in people assigned female as birth, as prevalent as endometriosis, got $31.30 for people assigned female at birth with diabetes. So diabetes got like $62 total for all people with diabetes. And then half of that, if we're just talking about like the female population, would be $31.30. So an endometriosis got $2 and they're just as prevalent as each other. So, you know, what we're really looking at is a disease that is so underfunded, a disease that is so misunderstood, where the research is so lacking, where the medical education is so lacking, that as patients, we're put in this situation where we go to the doctor, we tell our symptoms, and oftentimes our pain is normalized, we're misdiagnosed, or we're, you know, get patient blaming like, oh, it's just psychosomatic, like it's in your head, you have a low pain tolerance. I just want to like also highlight that endometriosis symptoms are so varied. Many people think endometriosis is just a menstrual disease or it's just, you know, really bad periods. A lot of people with endometriosis do have very, very painful periods, but that is certainly not the only symptom. And that's certainly not a symptom that every person with endometriosis has. So people in the medical community say, oh, well, that's why it's so hard to diagnose because there's so many symptoms. No, I'm sorry. The reason why it's so hard to diagnose is because so many doctors just cannot recognize the symptoms of endometriosis because they haven't been taught the symptoms of endometriosis. So even when we go to the doctor, let's just say, like, you know, for 16 years, I went to the doctor saying, wow, my periods are so painful. Like, I can't go to school. I'm calling an ambulance. I'm going to the emergency room when I have my period. And they tell you things like, oh, well, just go on birth control. Or they'll say too, like, are you stressed? Or they might say, being a woman, quote unquote, or being a menstruator means having pain, right? So it's like we are faced with these obstacles when we go to the doctor where they don't recognize our symptoms, even when our symptoms are like screaming in their faces. And even as you know, recent as in 2018, when I got diagnosed with endometriosis, because maybe we're like, oh yeah, well, maybe a decade ago. No, I mean, we're talking about now, you know, today, actually, you know, we still are going to the doctor and it's just really hard to get our symptoms taken seriously.
Definitely. You know, how did you end up finding somebody who did take you seriously?
You know, I think that's really tough. In some ways, I'm actually happy that I didn't get diagnosed for 16 years because without the diagnosis, I wasn't subjected to all of the misinformation that, you know, the majority of doctors have. And therefore, like, I wasn't further hurt by treatments that many of the doctors offer. Of course, on the other hand, not getting diagnosed for 16 years was devastating because I didn't know it was wrong. And I thought it was all in my head. And that caused a severe psychological impact on me. But yeah, I think, you know, once you get diagnosed, you have that word endometriosis. I think this is a disease. No, I know this is a disease where I have never seen another disease where a patient has to become so empowered about their disease. You know, when you talk to patients, you quickly realize that you have to know what your disease is. You have to know the treatment options. You have to learn the side effects. You have to learn, like, there's the patient advocacy voice is so strong in the endometriosis community because it's had to be, because unfortunately, so many doctors are not equipped to treat or try to manage the symptoms of endometriosis, and they are not equipped to give you informed consent. That means telling you about all the options available. That means telling you about side effects of the options that are available, like the pros and the cons, so that you can weigh the options and decide, okay, this is what I want to do. That's informed consent. And I would dare to say that 99% of the time, endometriosis patients with their doctors are not getting informed consent. And that's where advocates like myself and many others come in, where we're out there trying to educate people. These are your options available to you. You know, these are the pros and the cons. This is what you might expect. Here's patient experiences. And that's really tough to navigate, because of course we go to our doctor, and you know, with any disease, it's like you go to your doctor, you don't feel good, right? That's why you're there. You feel sick, so sick. You're exhausted. You're in pain. You're fatigued. Maybe you have brain fog. Like, it is so hard to think and concentrate and just be there. And maybe you have medical trauma from, you know, the 20 other doctors before this one who told you that it was just anxiety and they referred you a psychiatrist. And so you're there in front of the doctor and you're like, okay, well, what are my options? And when the options presented to you are, you know, just one or two options, a lot of times doctors even say, like, you have this one option or you just have to learn to live with it. I mean, what is that? There are so many more options than just one or two options out there for you know, management of symptoms or treatment. And then giving this patient an ultimatum, like, either you take this one medication that I can offer you or you learn to live with it. So I think a lot of patients were having like really devastating experiences with our medical doctors. And of course, not to mention, you know, people going to the doctor who, like, for example, with different identities than myself, like being told that when they're looking for pain medicine, that they're drug seekers because of the color of their skin. This, you know, can often happen with Black and brown folks, you know, people going to the doctor who are gender diverse and they don't identify as cis women and they're being misgendered by their doctors, or they're navigating in what is seen as a historically like women's, quote unquote, women's space with endometriosis or women's health. And so, you know, all of these obstacles compound together, whether that's misinformation, doctor ego, you know, racism, discrimination of many forms, unconscious bias, to just really make this practically impossible gauntlet of trying to find treatment or management options that actually help you.
Obviously, you know, there's no cure for endometriosis yet. But what have you found that helps you manage your symptoms? How did you find a plan that I guess makes things easier for you?
For me, my goals as a patient are really to improve my quality of life and to diminish my day-to-day symptoms. You know, I used to think there was only two ways to live my life, which was either like sick, you know, sick, I have endometriosis, or like not sick, I don't have endometriosis. And now I have come to realize that being sick, first of all, it's an incurable disease. So I have endometriosis. And unless they invent a cure in my lifetime, which I doubt, I'm going to have this till I get to my grave, you know? So I've come to realize that like being sick is a spectrum that I bounce around in, right? And so I used to, when I was younger, my symptoms were so, so severe. I had like every symptom, right? I mean, I had like chronic pelvic pain, menstrual, like, you know, out of this world, debilitating menstrual pain. I had nausea and brain fog and fatigue and urinary symptoms and bowel symptoms. And every time I had a bowel movement, I would scream because it was so painful. And every time I peed, I would wince because it would burn. You know, I had so many symptoms. I was really living at my worst, right? Like a 10 out of 10 of symptoms, so many days. And now I'm living at like a 4 out of 10, you know, and I think even on my worst days, it's really only rising up to like a 6 out of 10. And that's because of the treatment options that I've done have really helped me with a multidisciplinary approach, which has included like excision plus diet change, plus looking at my sleep patterns, plus addressing my mental health, changing my relationships, getting disability accommodations in my workplace. I mean, this is like a whole body disease that can affect your entire life. And so for me, it has come down to actually looking at my entire life, which has been grueling and exhausting, you know, and lengthy, very lengthy, but ultimately has helped me get to this place where I'm at, you know, maybe I hover at a 3 or 4 every single day. And I used to think that that wasn't like when I first got sick. No, I wanted to be at a 0. I wanted to have no symptoms. But now I realize that being at a 3 or 4, which is a very tolerable baseline for me, is fabulous, you know? And if I stayed at a 3 or 4 for the rest of my life, I think I would be actually be really happy. So yeah, it's going to depend on patient goals. And personally, when I first got sick, my goal to not be sick anymore, to not have pain anymore, to not have symptoms anymore, it really wasn't realistic. And the more I held on to that goal, the more disappointed and the more upset that I was. And for me, part of this process of finding peace with my disease and my endometriosis, which is totally an ongoing process, has been understanding like this is a chronic disease and it's very likely that I will have symptoms for the rest of my life.
Well, Amy, thanks so much for joining us today. Lastly, if you have a friend, a loved one, just someone in your life who has endometriosis, do you have any advice, I guess, on how we can better support them?
Yeah, I think the main one that comes to mind is believing the patient. You know, believe the person who you have in front of you. Maybe the person's experience sounds so absurd to you. Maybe it sounds absurd that every time they have a bowel movement, they pass out. But that's their truth. And that is the truth. You know, maybe it sounds absurd to you that they're terrified of their period and that they have PTSD from their period. But that is the truth that, you know, thousands, if not millions of people with endometriosis are facing every single day. So what we really need is we need support. We need understanding. Of course, I don't want to have to cancel plans. Of course, I don't want to have to call out sick from work. But unfortunately, that's what ends up happening. And living in a body that I personally identify as disabled, so like living in a body that is chronically ill, a body that is disabled, and living in that in a society where ableism is rife. Like when I tell people sometimes, oh, I have endometriosis and like I follow a very specific diet and like I don't eat, you know, XYZ, ABC. And they're like, oh my God, that's horrible. And like, I could never do that. And some people even say things like, oh my God, like I'd rather die than have endometriosis. And you're like, well, I live with this every day. And so comments like that are like extremely hurtful. Just finding more ways to believe the person in front of you and listen to them and try to be more empathetic and, you know, understand that they're struggling and they're doing their absolute best. Living with this disease is so, so challenging. I am proud of every single person living with this disease. You know, it is extraordinarily hard to navigate. And especially many times, not all people, but many people start getting symptoms when they're really young. And so you're navigating your whole life with this disease while you're in, you know, potentially in chronic pain 24/7. I mean, that's tough.
Amy Corfelli is a patient advocate for those with chronic pain and endometriosis. She interviews experts on the disease and covers her journey to diagnosis, treatment, and relative peace in her podcast In 16 Years, which you can find wherever you get your podcasts. She also has a book on the subject called Finding Peace with a Devastating Disease, Reflections on Endometriosis. You can learn more about her story at in16years.com. Thanks for listening to this week's 51%. 51% is a national production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany, New York. It's produced and hosted by me, Jesse King. Our associate producer is Jody Cowan, and our theme is Lolita by the Albany-based artist Girl Blue. Just a reminder that you can listen to 51% anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or wherever you get your podcasts. And you can stay in the loop on all of WAMC's shows by signing up for our weekly newsletter, Airwaves, at WAMC.org. We hope you'll join us next week. Until then, I'm Jesse King for 51%.
I was every single girl, I was nobody else, I was so sure of myself. I was 15 and a half, he was a hollow laugh. And I lost my cool somewhere along the way. At night and down the hallway, I had to learn how to look away. I lost my cool.